Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is a Lip Media podcast.
Sit, boo boo, sit.
Girl,
I
that's some bad hat, Harry.
It's a cool bit of show.
Get any of that?
Not a doctor.
Bye, have a beautiful
frimula.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis and today we'll be discussing Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun Season 1. Now, if you're a keen listener, you may have noticed a couple of things with how this episode started. We aren't reviewing Lovecraft Country Season 1, and Damask did not introduce herself. Unfortunately, Damask is still unable to record a new episode, so while we wait a little longer, I'm joined by three very special guests to very misguidedly talk about an absurdist humor comedy show. From the Swapcast podcast, please welcome back to Hunting Seasons our unofficial third chair and poo hands himself, Mr. Paul Mitzi. Hey, Paul.
Hey, I don't know if I agree with being called poo hands every episode, though.
From the Dialogue Options Video Game podcast, we also have Mr. Joel McDonald. Hey, Joel.
Hello. Hello.
And the other host of Dialogue Options, Mr. Kyron Morrison. I don't mean to call you the other host like you're
it's
the
fine.
Secondary host, Kyron.
It's fine. We switch on and off. It's fine. We're both hosts every other week.
Excellent.
Exactly, yeah.
How are we all doing? How are you doing first, Paul?
Yeah, going good. Just first day of the harsh lockdowns in SA, but yeah. Staying positive, so no, all good.
As you were saying before the podcast, how the things have changed. Most of this year, Damask and I have been in lockdown. You've been loading up in South Australia, being able to do stuff like go to parties and you know, have a social life. Now look at you, not laughing anymore.
I still think this is due to you guys doing voodoo on me because as revenge for making you watch Westworld and upload Season 1.
This is it. We deliberately got coronavirus, put in a letter, sent it to your house. You didn't get it, which is, you know, but somehow it got out there. So no, that didn't happen. That's terrible. That's terrible. We'd never do that. Joel, how are you?
Not too bad. Just trucking along here, like, yeah, as lockdowns lifted for us, so starting to ease back into doing more things, but still spending a lot of time watching TV and things. I just finished watching Season 2 of The Boys, so I'm caught up on that now. But yeah, apart from that, just trucking along, can't complain.
And Kyron?
Yeah, again, much the same. Obviously, as a regional Victorian, our lockdown lessened up a bit of longer ago, but I've still just been so swamped with work that my free time is spent trying to get through as many games before the end of the year as I can at this stage.
Oh yeah, you're coming up to the big. So what we've got, you guys do a big end of year top 10 or top 5 sort of game of the year type thing at the
end of the year. Early next year we'll do that.
Yeah, early next year. Now Cyberpunk is pushed to as far as it possibly could into December. It's
my busiest month, and it's just here's a massive, RPG. I'm like, cool, that's great.
Yeah,
thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Well, before we get into the review proper, I just wanted to ask, what have you guys been watching, playing stuff lately? Is there anything particularly interesting you'd like to share with the listeners? Paul, I'll start with you since we're back to the start of the rotation.
Actually, today I just binge watched the entire season of the new Netflix Christmas TV series, Dash and Lily. Have you guys heard of this at all?
It's a TV series. No. I didn't know. I knew that was a bunch of Christmas content, but I didn't realize it was a TV series.
So Netflix have been really doubling down on their Christmas content. And this one is it's about 8 20-minute episodes, which is perfect length for me. And it's from the makers of Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I have.
So, it's about this girl and she is sick of being lonely at Christmas, so she puts a blank notebook in a bookstore with instructions for like a scavenger hunt around New York, and then hoping that a boy will find it, and then they pass notes to each other in the notebook and do all Christmassy things but never meet each other. It's very heartwarming, and just it's exactly what I needed in ISO, so I would highly recommend it for people that want that kind of content.
Excellent. You kind of sold me on it, to be honest. It sounds kind of cool. I want to check that out.
Yeah, it's really quirky. It's cute, and like it's like New York porn, you know, like the snow falling and the Christmas decorations. And it's all shot in location, so if you like that kind of stuff, it's definitely worth a watch.
Joel, you said have you just finished The Boys season 2?
Yeah, I sort of marathoned it. I watched the first two episodes months and months ago of the first season. And I enjoyed it quite a lot. I just never got back to it. And then the other day, I'd caught up on like Brooklyn Nine-Nine because I finally got around to watching that as well. And I was like, I'm going to give it a watch. I'm just going to go back to it. So I started back from the start again. And then once I got to a certain point, I just couldn't stop. And I just sort of marathoned the whole thing. And that show is not for everyone, I don't think. It's pretty bleak and pretty full on at some points. I not so much enjoyed it. I had a good time watching it. Even then, it's still not good. Like it was good to watch. I enjoy. I don't know how to put it. It's similar how I was talking about Last of Us Part 2 earlier this year as well. But
do you think it's good though? It doesn't have to be enjoyable necessarily. Fun time to be good. I've had people I trust suggest. So Cam Williams, who's a friend of the show, I may have mentioned this in a previous episode. He said he could see The Boys becoming like Game of Thrones in the sense of like where it's going and like the sort of mythos it's building. Is that good? Would you agree with that?
I could see that. There is another element of Game of Thrones that I would probably equate to it as well in terms of like no one's safe.
Sure.
I guess in a way to some respect. But yeah, I mean it's Carl Urban. I could watch him like do anything, especially when he's doing like accents and things like that. It was just, and with that Cockney accent, he's so unlikable, but I can't stop watching him. And then Jack Quaid as Huey as well is really great. The cast is like really enjoyable to watch. Anthony Starr, who plays Homelander, is terrifying. Mm-hmm. Like that character is just like sometimes horrific and most of the time horrific, but like he's just so scary to watch, and just the way that he holds himself and emotes in scenes, and it's which is, you know, funny because, you know, he's actually got a cameo in this in Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun. Seeing him in that, while I was like, I'd literally just come hot off the heels, I was still in the like towards the end of season 2 of The Boys, and I was just like, crazy whiplash from seeing him go from one sort of thing extreme to the other. But yeah, I think it's really great. It is very gory. Like it is gory TV. As much as I hate to say it, I'm kind of desensitized a little bit to it, I guess, but it's
video games do that to you.
I know, right?
Video games.
Yep, that's everyone else does. So, but yeah. I would say it's definitely worth a watch if you're into the sort of hearing about like the comics were sort of like written in sort of like Bush era government, and then seeing where this sort of is very much different from the comics, but it is very much a show for our time and place at the moment, especially in America. So yeah, it's pretty fascinating in some aspects.
Yeah, I have to say I watched The Boys as well, and I must be a terrible person because I didn't find it hard to watch. I just found it very enjoyable and funny, and the gore is hilarious, and it's an enjoyable show to watch for me.
I'm kind of glad you said that because I just didn't want to pay myself in a certain light, but yeah, there were moments especially where I was like, yeah, absolutely. It was just one of those, like, so many of those moments where something happens and you just go, oh my God, like, shock laughing in a way, but yeah
it always manages to outdo itself.
Yeah, it does. Very much so. Oh boy.
All right, and Kyron, what have you been up to? What have you been watching?
Look, like I said, playing a lot of games, but as far as what I'm watching, I've actually, I was speaking to you about this on the weekend.
We actually saw each other in person, which was lovely.
We did. It was I still, I now know that Bro is a real person again. I was beginning to wonder after a few months.
Are you sure I wasn't a hologram? I didn't touch you. I wasn't willing to touch you. Might not be.
Look, I'm just paranoid enough because I've been watching a bunch of Fringe, so.
There you go.
Who knows now? But yeah, like it's one of those shows I've been meaning to watch, and I think it was one of your lockdown recommendations, bro.
Yes,
like back
it was.
In the day. Mm-hmm. So a friend was just like, just gave me the DVDs and was like, watch this show. And I was pretty slow to get onto it, but about halfway through season two, like it's in, it took me like 6 months to get through a lot of that. I liked it, but I was just like, oh, I'll dip in here and out. And then season two onwards, a big plot point hit, and I've just been chaining it ever since.
It's one of my all-time favorite, like, oh shit, and then the plot starts moments. Just like when the actual story kicks in.
Yeah, for sure.
No better example of that in a show than Fringe Season 2. It's like the last thing you want to do is give any sort of hint as to what it is, because it's such a cool
moment. Yeah, absolutely.
But then it's like, oh, now I get this show, and this is, I'm so invested.
Yeah.
So you, and like you're, go on.
I was going to say, the biggest revelation for me from this entire show, like, I had nowhere near enough respect for John Noble, but I should have had so much more. And now I do. Like, man, that man is amazing.
Well, that's the weird thing, right? It's like, I try and think I've seen him in apart from Return of the King
exactly.
and Fringe. And both of those are pretty excellent performances. I mean, they are excellent performances. What else has he sort of done?
He's in Boys Season 2.
Oh, is he? Yeah. He does show up in The Boys.
Very, very nice.
Did you miss him, Joel?
No, I'm having a mental blank about who we're talking about here.
Oh, he played Carl Urban's dad in Boys Season 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
That's John Noble, man.
Yeah, he's very good.
He is.
He's incredible in Fringe. Actually, like Joshua Jackson and Anna Torv, I love that trio.
Yes. So I'm worried because I'm going to finish Fringe, and now I know that Mindhunter's not coming back. Where am I going to go for my Anna Torv fix now?
Yeah, like, I know. It's really sad.
This is unacceptable.
Well, Dawson's Creek's just been added to Netflix, so you can at least continue Joshua Jackson.
Stay on that Joshua Jackson train.
All right, let's get this moving and get to our spoiler-free review of Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun, Season 1.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun is an American sketch comedy television show created by and starring members of the Australian comedy group Auntie Donna, with notable producers behind the show including Egg Helms and Scott Aukerman. Creative forces behind Comedy Bang Bang, the Earwolf Podcast Network, and Between Two Ferns with Zach Galifianakis. Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun premiered on Netflix on November 11, 2020, and stars Mark Samuel Bonanno, Broden Kelly, Zachary Ruan, and a slew of celebrity guests that I won't mention here because it would spoil the fun. Big Ol' House of Fun Season 1 consists of 6 episodes, each coming in at around 20 minutes, and took us approximately 2 hours to watch. So, before we get into our reviews, I just wanted to ask you all, how familiar were you with Auntie Donna before Big Ol' House of Fun on Netflix? Paul, we'll start with you once again.
I was vaguely familiar with Auntie Donna. I know my co-host of the Swapcast podcast, Brendan's like a giant fan, and he had shown me video here or there. And I don't know why, I remember enjoying those videos. I don't know why I didn't watch more of them. I think it's because YouTube rarely recommends me things that I'll actually enjoy. So, as much as I appreciate the constant stream of like Dua Lipa videos, it would be nice to have a few of these things like sprinkled in there as well. Vaguely familiar with them, yeah.
Sure. Joel?
This is going to sound like I'm like name dropping here. I actually went to uni. They were in the year below me with Broden and Zach and the writer, one of the writers is Sam, and the guy who does all the music, Tom. They were in like the year below me at university in Ballarat. So I kind of knew them from there. And then I left uni for reasons. And then, a couple of years later, saw them at the comedy, they had a show at the comedy festival. I was like, oh, that's really cool. They're doing some cool stuff. And then from then I just always just out of the corner of my eye would see them just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And then, I finally got around to seeing them live a couple of years ago with Kyron, actually.
Yes.
We went to their Glenridge Secondary College show at the Comedy Festival. One of the best nights of like one of the best shows I've been to. Only topped by them actually was I went to their album concert. They did a live concert where they performed all the songs from this album that they put out, and it was like a concert, like a rock show. There was a mosh pit and people were dancing and singing, and they got into the crowd, and it was wild, and it was so much fun. But yeah, it's just been so amazing to see them blow up and now have a show on Netflix that's, you know, executive produced by Egg Helms. Like, that's massive. Like, it's huge. And I'm super, 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 like, blown away with how well they've done. Like, not to say that, like, because they definitely deserve it. They've worked so hard. You just got to look at, like, the slew of content that they've put out over the last 10 years. And yeah, so like it's really awesome to see them sort of get to this point now, and where they have this sort of, they were sort of already on sort of like, you know, the underground global recognition, but being trending on like on Netflix at various places around
trending
the world.
Trending in the top 10 a lot of places. I think definitely in the UK. I'm not sure if they broke the top 10 in the States or not, but they were definitely thereabouts. Yeah. They're working their way into it. Kyron, what about you?
So I'm sort of somewhere in the middle. I do remember Joel showing me a lot of Auntie Donna sketches, like, back in the day. He was always just like, you should check these guys out. But I think it was, like, whatever year they did, like, their 1999 special, like, that YouTube miniseries, was sort of where I really jumped on board and basically haven't really looked back since. Like, every time there's a new Auntie Donna sketch, I'm like, cool, gotta watch that. I try to keep up to date on the podcast because that essentially is just even more Auntie Donna ridiculousness if you're hungry for it. But, yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm probably similar to Paul, I guess. I know about it more through you guys than anything else. I think you guys have thrown, well, in like group chats and stuff like that that we have, particularly Joel and Kyron here, you've thrown up videos here and there and will make references to Auntie Donna sketches that I don't know anything about. They'll then have to go watch it to sort of get the joke. Clompy something. I don't know.
Mr. Bull.
Stompy.
That stuff. And so here and there I've seen bits. I'll be honest with you, like, they've never really grabbed my attention. They've like, oh yeah, had a little bit of a giggle here, had a little bit of a giggle there, or sort of just bounced off things and never really given my full attention to it. It's not necessarily this absurdist humor is not necessarily my sort of my cup of tea generally in a general sense, which I do want to just talk about before we get into our reviews, why we're reviewing this show right now. And I think there's a couple of reasons, because trying to review an absurdist comedy series when we aren't comedians, I mean, we can be funny sometimes. I think our podcasts are entertaining, but we aren't comedians. And something that's so subjective as humor is ridiculous. But to be fair, it took 2 hours to watch, and you guys did me a solid by letting me do, like, coming onto this episode in a pinch, so thank you very much. So that's your reason. And also, I think it's worth noting that we are an Australian podcast, and we don't really review that much Australian content. And Auntie Donna, this is something that's accessible to everybody internationally on Netflix, and it's probably worth highlighting for people who may not be aware of it. So hopefully that we can do that at least. With all that said, Paul, would you like to give your spoiler-free review of Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun Season 1?
I'd love to. So 2020 has been a rough year, guys. And in South Australia, it's especially been a tough week. But I have to say, the extreme silliness of Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun was such a welcome reprieve from everything that we have been dealing with at the moment. There is no deeper meaning here. Auntie Donna isn't a meditation on injustice or abuse or really anything. It's just a bunch of Australians using a Hollywood budget to try to make the audience laugh as much as possible. Comedy, and especially sketch comedy, is as subjective as they come. But I have to say, this show made me laugh a lot. The sheer absurdity of it all and the willingness to go that bit too far for a joke, this show had me in its hooks from sketch one. And for me, there were very few sketches that didn't have at least one solid laugh. I've had a hit and miss run with Netflix sketch comedy. I Think You Should Leave is one of my all-time favorite shows, but more recent efforts like Sarah Cooper's Everything's Fine and Astronomy Club were not particularly funny to me. Auntie Donna is a show that I will be re-watching and showing to my friends and quoting forever. And I know that for a lot of people, that won't be the case, and that's fine. Hating awesome things is a valid life choice. Now, let's get through this episode so I can go back to YouTube and binge the entire Auntie Donna back catalogue.
How much would you say there is, like, the people who are in the know of this, like there's like dozens and dozens and dozens of sketches? That's pretty amazing.
Lots. Yeah, like, so much, and so much good stuff as well. There's some, like, misses in there for sure, but with the amount of, like, firing content that they put out there, it's...
I think as well, because of the Netflix really taking off, they've actually revamped their channel a bit, and they've actually got like a introduction to Arnie Donner.
That's a good idea.
Selection of videos at the top of their channel, sort of to wet your whistle on.
I'd be fascinated to know what the metrics have done for them in sort of the last week or so since the show has come out, and just people looking for more and then find them on YouTube. Joel, would you like to give your review?
Sure. So, you know, like I said before, it's no secret that I'm a big fan of Auntie Donna, and not just because, like, I knew them in a previous life sort of situation, but it's more so that this kind of weird stuff for some reason hits with me more so than most things. I think the thing that I love the most about anything that Auntie Donna does is that it's usually, like, each sketch is usually related around, like, based around one stupid joke, but their commitment to that one stupid joke and just to explore every conceivable facet of that stupid joke is what I like about it so much, because you start at one spot and then suddenly that sketch will just end, or it'll evolve into this, like, you know, nightmare situation, and I just love seeing where that goes and seeing how crazy they can get. And it's, yeah, like I said before, it's just amazing to see them finally get this big break, and to see that it's sort of taking off in some places in the world. So it isn't for everyone, but, like, you know it is 2 hours to watch the whole thing. Like, I sat down yesterday to recap a couple of episodes while I had lunch, and before I knew it, I'd watched the whole season again. it was just such an easy watch to put on and laugh at, and you mentioned, I haven't finished watching it yet, Paul, but I've watched some of I Think You Should Leave as well, and similar sort of, like, in that sort of vein of weird comedy that I really enjoyed that as well. But I like these, like, 6 episodes and you're done. They're 20 minutes each. One of my favorite podcasts, My Brother and Me, they did a TV show for a now defunct comedy streaming service. It's a similar thing. I can watch that show over and over and over again, and I have, and still find it funny. And I feel like this, like, Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun is going to fit into that category now. Of my, like, go-to, I need, like, just to unwind for a couple of hours, I'm just going to watch this and laugh.
Excellent. Kyron?
Again, much in the same boat as Joel, honestly. For me, watching this show was incredible, not just because I'm a big fan of Arnie Donna, but just to see them, with a budget, flourishing on Netflix with all these guest stars, and just the combination of sketches that are brand new, sketches that they've done on their, like, stage shows, which I was just like, oh, I recognize this, I recognize that. And then just even some sketches that felt like sort of sequels to their older sketches.
Oh, it just, okay.
Yeah, it sort of, obviously tickled my funny bone a lot. And I think what really helps, as Joel said, their commitment to, like, exploring that joke, but even just the chemistry that these three guys have and their ability to play off of each other, and just, which is obviously just developed over all these years of doing a sketch comedy. And that was really what helped drive this series home for me. Like, as funny as all the sketches were, it was so often the thing that would break me the most would just be a throwaway reaction from just, even if it's just like an insult. But I'm like, I don't know why that was so funny, but it was. It's just, again, these guys just play off each other so well, but I can't stop watching.
Very cool. All right. I think the note I took at the end of episode 1 kind of sums up my overall impressions. I liked it more than I thought I would. Glowing review, I know. This is hardly the best thing I've ever watched. Sometimes I wasn't sure if I was liking it more or less as it went along, but that has more to do with just vibing off each new idea that was thrown at me. I'm certainly not walking away from Big Old House of Fun a convert to Auntie Donna's stylings yet, but what I got was enjoyable enough that I'll probably check out season 2, if there is a season 2, when I'm in the right mood. There's a lot to admire about these guys, I think. And again, I'm coming at this as someone who's only slightly familiar with Auntie Donna and is apparently taking this way too seriously. But for the podcast, why not? It's short. 6 20-minute episodes packed full of skits that don't last more than 2 or 3 minutes each. And infectious energy and breakneck pace means even the jokes that aren't landing for me personally don't last long enough to become a problem. And to be fair, nothing made me, like, cringe or, like, bounce off it necessarily. unless it was meant to. Sometimes they're trying to make you cringe. Broden, Zach, and Mark are fully committed to each and every moment, that nothing is ever worse than meh, maybe. Without getting into specific skits or jokes, which we will do in our spoiler section, I'm sure, there were a number of elements that I enjoyed thoroughly. Just the general execution on themes, feel, and ideas, such as having fun with aspect ratio changes and different film quality and styles. Like, whenever they go for something, they go hard in, not just with what they're doing, the trio in particular, and who else might be in the shot, but like what they're doing to make it feel that genre or feel that way, with like production values and stuff. The myriad of absolutely throwaway celebrity cameos, what a perfect waste of talent. And the very vague episodic structure, right? I'm a simple man. I like me some structure in my comedy. Even madness needs something to shape it for me. And each episode's word of the day and very vague narrative through line was enough to feed that hunger in me. So, I know that makes me boring, but, like, just having that to, like, sync these things to, I helped me to enjoy the madness a little bit more. Overall, I probably only chortled a handful of times, but I smiled a lot. It was an easy breezy, very silly couple of hours that I can at least say I don't regret spending in front of the TV. Feel free to put that quote on your poster, boys. Which you will probably tear down. Now that's... let's get into just talking about the show in detail. Getting into spoilers, I guess, for that. A score for this. What would you give this out of 5 stars, Paul?
I'm giving it 5. This is 5 just so stars? Up my alley. Five fucking stars. And I'm not backing down, all right?
Jesus. All right. Joel?
Hey, I got to follow the same thing. Like, 5 fucking stars for sure. Like, yeah, I think it's definitely 5 stars. And also, my score ratio doesn't mean anything here. So
that's good point.
Mine's a throwaway score, so I can give... I have no
What
previous...
did you give Doctor Who Season 11? I'm trying to remember.
I think I was very... I think I thought very carefully about that as well. Okay, I'm pretty sure it was... I think I gave it like a 3.5, 4,
I mean,
maybe?
Paul's name is Mud on this show, so his score doesn't mean anything at this point. Kyron, what was your score out of 5 stars?
Yeah, look, I'm sorry, Brod, but I'm going to come up with the other two guests here. 5 stars.
I'm going to give it a 1 just to break the line. Just pull it down. I'm going to do that. I'm actually going to give it a very high 3.5. I was like looking through my, like, I've done, you know, nearly 200 freaking, or 100 reviews, 200 reviews? 200 reviews. And I was looking at my 3.5s and my 4s. I'm like... it's definitely better than the 3.5s, but just not quite where my 4s lie at. So a high 3.5, which should be a recommendation. Like, I'm recommending this show. Even as someone who doesn't feel like it was for me, who didn't feel like I was fully enjoying it as much as you guys obviously did, I definitely liked it. Like, I don't really have criticisms for it, except that I didn't always find it funny. And God knows, if we've done enough on this show, I have no sense of humor. So don't listen to me.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the podcast to please review us on Apple Podcasts. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and maybe a couple of nice words our way. And in a blatant act of theft from the Swapcast podcast, to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1. Face off. Next week, we hopefully will finally be doing Getting to our review of Lovecraft Country Season 1. If you'd like to contribute to our discussion of Lovecraft Country, or if you have any thoughts on Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Auntie Donna's Big Old House of Fun Season 1.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
Spoiler warning. From here on, we'll be discussing everything that happens in Season 1 of Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun. I remind you, this is an absurdist sketch comedy show. We're spoiling jokes. There's nothing more, like, in-depth or anything than that. Before listening any further, we recommend watching all of Auntie Donna's Big Ol' House of Fun up to this point. If you've not yet done so, proceed with caution. There are spoilers ahead. You have been warned.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I want to start with something you said, Kyron, because this intrigues me a little bit. The idea of like sequels to old sketches. What?
Yes.
What sort of stuff are you referencing there? That's interesting to me.
So I'm not sure if sequel is the right word, but almost like spiritual successors, the one that comes to mind immediately for me is the housemate interview one.
Yes,
which is even just a sketch where I sort of
was going to guess that one, because there's one where Broden's like standing at the front of a classroom is like the
teacher
the
roll
doing
call
the roll
sketch.
Call. Yeah,
yeah. So and that was just the sort of thing I was getting at there, where I was like, this is familiar, but it's new as well. So it's just sort of taking that idea and sort of taking it to different places with different stupid jokes.
The same, very similar thing with Trendy Barbershop as well. Which
yes,
is
a, yeah.
Trendy Cafe or Trendy Bar? Trendy Bar.
It was Trendy Bar.
Yeah.
Oh, Trendy Cafe.
Yeah, Trendy Cafe.
I can't remember now. There's a lot of trendies.
It's a trendy something, a hospitality restaurant. yeah, so that's also like a spiritual successor sort of thing. And the sports physiotherapist one as well.
Yes, yeah.
What was that similar to?
So in the Glenridge Secondary College series, like the YouTube series they did, there's a sketch where it's Michelle Brazier being the school nurse. And that's why she says at the start, she's like, I used to work with children, and then I moved into sports physiotherapy, which is exactly the same. So that's like a bridging.
See, there's lore here.
Yeah, yeah. There kind of is. Cowdoy as well. He's a carryover character.
Cowdoy.
Yeah, I thought I'd heard of that character before, and then they just like slotted him in as like the fourth housemate. That was like, how did you guys feel about the transition? Like, these are like famous Australian comedians who don't stop making Australian references, which I will talk about in a second, that transition into this, like, American... Like, they've gone from doing YouTube skits and live stage performances and stuff like that, transitioning to this Netflix formula with a big budget, made in LA, obviously, made in America. Like, did that transition seem seamless to you? Did it change the quality of their product in any way? Did it change the feel of their show or their comedy at all?
I personally don't think so. I like you were saying before about how like each episode had some form of structure to it. Like watching through the second time, sort of like really absorbing it a lot more. I was sort of like really appreciative of that. Like I think it kind of worked really well with their style of humor. Like it just because they can just like you don't know when a sketch is going to end or how it's going to end, and it can just go snap and you're into the next part. But it always sort of felt like it flowed really well, especially the first episode, I think, like the first like three sketches kind of flow from one to another pretty well in my eyes for like three different kind of ideas.
It doesn't feel like a show with any compromises. Like you can't feel the studio going, you can't do that or that's going too far. It really feels like Netflix were like, do whatever the fuck you want. And they did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, theoretically, that's what Netflix has been famous for, right? There's often talk about in Hollywood where you can feel the studio influence, where someone's idea has come in and changed things. And the opposite has been true of Netflix. There's been reports of people feeling like Netflix has actually been too hands-off at times. Mm-hmm. So for someone like Auntie Donna to come in who have a really, really solid idea of what their comedy stylings are and being allowed to do that to just with a budget to the full extreme and not have to compromise to like, you know, make the executives happy or whatever, that seems like a perfect marriage.
Absolutely.
The only time I've ever heard that idea refuted was about what's happening with the Avatar live action series. But we won't talk about that now.
How did you guys feel about the constant, well, not constant, but the numerous, very Australian-specific references throughout? Things like Crazy John's phones and 420 pies and
Aquila
Brand
shoes.
Denyer and Aquila shoes and Eagle Boys pizza and my favorite of all, Car City Ringwood.
I was going to say, that's my Car City Ringwood, guys.
Car City Ringwood is such a deep cut that anyone knows, like in Victoria, I don't know if it's like a world.
Yeah,
Victoria,
for sure.
I think, but like Victoria,
I never Car heard City of it. Ringwood.
Yeah, like Victoria, you've heard that ad, you know the jingle.
Car
like,
City.
That's a deep cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and there's nothing that we as Australians love more than than Americans seeing our things and like acknowledging things that are ours. I don't know why we love that so much, but we do.
It's an inferiority complex, Paul, and you are 100% right. We love it. Like, reference humor is the lowest form of humor, right? This is what Family Guy's been living off for years, you know? Yeah. Cut to Peter's in, I don't know, Gremlins or something like that. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah.
And this is just... And it's not really, they're not really jokes. They just happen to name the things that need naming with things that only Australians and sometimes Melburnians, Victorians will recognize. But that gets a smile from me every time because I guess I've got a dumb lizard brain who, exactly like you said, likes to see that stuff represented in something that I know is also being seen in the USA and the UK and Europe and everywhere around the world. It's like, haha, Car City Ringwood got mentioned in an internationally spread wide show.
It's a whole thing on like YouTube where there's like hundreds of videos where they get like celebrities and give them like Tim Tams. Tell us what you think of this.
Yeah.
Yes. Or pronounce these words as well.
Yeah. Like,
Vegemite.
Yeah. What does Vegemite taste? You know, and like these shouldn't be entertaining, but I'll watch every single one of those. And it just something about it just gets to us.
There's a genre, just to go off track slightly, there's a genre of YouTube video that I've come across recently. I think it's happened ever since. You know that Dreams by Fleetwood Mac meme started, you know?
Yeah. And skateboard.
Yeah, but it's like somehow from that I found this genre of YouTube videos where young people, often people of color as well, are finding like 60s, 70s, 80s music that white people love for the first time and listening to things like Fleetwood Mac or Queen or the Beatles or whatever it might be. And like, or what's the one? I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Like, who's that?
Phil Collins.
Phil Collins, thank you.
Yeah.
The dad of Lily Collins from
Emily in Paris. Everything goes back to Emily in Paris.
Everything comes back to Emily in Paris. so that was for you, Paul. That was just me.
Thank you.
And then like, I've watched a few of those and I'm like, I am such a loser for wanting validation from younger people who aren't of my skin tone. Like, what a dorky thing to want to enjoy.
It's a similar thing going on from like in video games as well with Among Us being huge at the moment.
Sure.
And everyone's using the whole term of like, you know, oh, I think purple sus, like using the word sus as like a, and the world sort of discovering that. And we're just like, we've been doing that. That's like general knowledge for like general conversation for us. But yeah, it's a similar thing where every time you hear people like figuring it out and sort of like, oh, that's a really cool way of saying it. You're like, okay, cool. Yeah.
Our high school lingo is getting validation. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Do you guys have anything specifically you'd like to talk about? Because the next part thing on my agenda is let's talk about our favorite skits, which possibly is the worst thing we could do, but maybe is the only thing left. Is there anything about the show you'd like to talk about, a quality or an aspect of the show?
I think like the details of the show are really good. Like rewatching it, there's stuff that just goes by so quickly that you don't even realize. Like, just before we started recording, I was rewatching the Family Feud sketch, and he in that bit he like tells someone he's gonna punch his fucking face, and it bleeps face instead of fucking. Like, and it's just those little things that you don't even realize when you first watch it, and then when you rewatch it, there's all these little details. I think the show is so stupid and like silly that it's easy to overlook actually how much detail and hard work and like thought actually went into all these sketches and all these moments. So yeah, I really appreciated that.
I think the only like censoring bleep that actually is that actually hits, I believe, is one from Egg Helms when he finally figures out that everyone thinks he's Ed Helms.
Helms.
Yeah, like I think that is like one of the only ones that's on point. Every time they try to censor something else, it's always off point. Like in the housemate sketch, like new housemate sketch, like I fuck loud, I fuck often, and I fuck every night. Like it's just beep beep straight after it. Like that kind of thing. Yeah, I think that's the only one that nails like the actual timing of it. But yeah, I was sort of building off that as well. Like just the continuity of things as well. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Right from the very first sketch with Everything's a Drum and the chaos that ensues from that, them just trashing their house where Mark jumps through a wall and then for the rest of the series, that wall's plastered over and not painted and it's, like, constantly there. But, yeah, things like that, they're just, like, you don't even realise it's just organically there within the scene. Yeah,
that is one of the things that makes me want to rewatch it, though, is because there's definitely a lot of pause or, yeah, blinking you'll miss it moments that were definitely worth pausing, like things that people are writing or scrawling. Like there's bits where I think, is it Mark? I can never remember which one's which. Is like writing something in a pad while he's talking. It's like, I scream and I don't think anyone's listening or something like that. And like lots of things like that. In the moment, I'm like, if I didn't have to review this today, I would be pausing it to check what that is. And that would definitely be worth rewatching.
I think my favorite one was the in the sketch with the man who's shit himself but is taking it really well. Like when I was watching it the second time, I paused on the credits and it's actually just the scripts to the first episode.
What?
And it goes through like the lyrics to Everything's a Drum.
Really?
Yeah.
I did notice the ending song changes every episode as well.
Yes, it does. I also like that.
I only noticed that on the fifth episode.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, this is changing.
Because Netflix was always taking me away from the ending. But exactly. On the second watch through, I was like, no, let's play it with credits. And that's when I realized that it was just great.
You got to change your settings, guys. I have no autoplay. I really agree. Yeah.
100%. I'll have to turn on watch the credits because I'm sick of that happening.
Yeah, and my wife doesn't have that. And every time I watch, like, we're watching something on her account and it just automatically starts, I'm like, calm. It's fine. It's fine. Everyone has different ways of watching things. It's fine.
So we're four white guys in our 30s.
In Australia.
Did anyone feel triggered by the impersonation of white guys in their 30s in the initial
sketch? Absolutely not.
It's brilliant.
The Dark Knight is a brilliant film.
Brilliant film. I had no problems with that. I take it on the chin. Fair enough.
Yep.
Nothing is safe. No one is safe.
I just wanted to highlight the music as well, because most of it, like especially a lot of like the dancier stuff and like the dubsteppy like house music stuff, that's Tom, who does a lot of, he has like a side project called God Wolf he did with Joe Kosky, who's another Ballarat alumni who actually is referenced in the show, The Beers.
Joel, I think you went to uni 1 year too early.
Yeah, I think I did, yeah. I have a weird memory. Again, this makes me sound like such a wanker, but like there was I have a memory of being really drunk at a party, and like, cause I used to talk with Zach quite a lot and we were just drunk talking about how much we wanted to start a radio show together. This is like a weird memory of mine that I have. And now
called regret, Joel.
But
Joel, I'm sorry. I'm not Zach. Okay. Jeez.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, no, so, like, yeah, the beer labels are actually called Koskies, and there's a picture of Joe Kosky on them.
Yeah, okay.
There's also Steve in the organ sketch, where it's like, give them to everyone, but not... Yeah, I hate Steve. That's actually a picture of another guy. He's not credited, but it's another guy from their same year level at Ballarat as well. And I didn't realize that until I checked the IMDb page, and it's listed there as uncredited. And I went, oh my god, it is too. But yeah, the music itself, their music is fantastic, and like if you've just watched Auntie Donna, you haven't really like Big Old House of Fun, and you haven't watched anything else or anything, I would recommend watching the music videos for the album, because they're really funny. Particularly if you start with something like Chuffed.
Chuffed is actually one of my favorite ones I've come across previously. That's the one about the like dad who's just chuffed.
Yeah,
that's actually really, really good. I really enjoyed that one.
It's like just this parody on like bragging rap, and it's as Broden being a dad talking about all the things that make him chuffed, and it's really funny. And That whole album, like, I could honestly listen to just, like, you know, while I'm driving. I have done that, like, going to and from work. That's my go-to listening album. So, and, yeah, for the most part, Tom does all the music for that. And I've always loved it. Like, the Auntie Donna theme, which isn't in this show, but, like, their normal Auntie Donna theme is, like, this fucking pseudo dubstep banger that is so good. And when they played it at the live concert, it was just like a free-for-all. So yeah, big shout out to the music side of things. I think it's really great, and like you said, the ending credits song changes every time and has it basically recaps the episode and tells you if you didn't like it to get fucked and just kidding, please keep watching.
That's a Paul Mitzi that's a Paul Mitzi move, that one.
I literally tell my listeners to get fucked every episode. So I deeply related to that song every time I play.
I do agree with you though. The music is really strong. There are a lot of songs. There's like at least one song an episode, if not more.
Yeah.
And there's some really, really good stuff in there. All right, we're going to do it. Favorite skits. Who's willing to go first? What was a favorite skit for you guys? Or just a favorite moment if you prefer?
Mark's graphic mime sex scene.
Oh my God.
Let's just start there.
That turned one of my least favorite skits into one of my favorite skits as it went along. Like that initial bit where they're just talking about each other's clothes, I'm like, did fucking David Lynch direct this? What the fuck?
I was going to say,
hey, Zach likes David Lynch. Leave him alone.
Yeah, well, now I understand what's wrong with this. Go on.
Kyron, if I'm not familiar, though, if I'm not mistaken, though, that was essentially their haven't you done well for this series, wasn't it?
It sort of seemed like it. We didn't have a haven't you done well, and that felt like the closest to what we got.
Yeah. But then, yeah.
Good Lord.
It like, just, you know, delves into this like graphic sex scene, mime sex scene of Mark having sex with himself basically, and it's every time, like, just the amount of detail he puts into every movement is just so disturbing, and I can't look away, and I love it so much.
I really loved in the final episode when the Queen rocks up and she walks in the door and she says, "What's up, you piece of shit?" That just broke me. I don't think I laughed at anything more this entire year than that moment. So I would have to put that.
Oh. It's particularly great as well, considering it came out like, what, a week before The Crown season 4 as well.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that.
It
was a running gag on their socials, like leading up to it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, they seem to have an affection for The Crown because it. I was rewatching their like their web series that they just did, the one you were referencing before, and they referenced The Crown DVD in the Kiln sketch, yeah. And then in this one as well, in the Family Feud sketch as well, things you put in your mouth. The Crown yeah, season one. Sense.
Are you aware of the power of shadows?
Yeah. Aware of the power of shadows.
Oh. Or just like, it's like, you know, things you're putting out next. But I was going to say shotgun, I'm skipping you. It's okay, he's dead.
I think I've got a selection of favorites. The Ellen sketch, where it's like you've won a Toyota Corolla.
Yeah.
Just the absurd levels that went to made me really, really happy.
It goes for so long.
The fact that it just stays on Broden's Ellen the entire time as well. And it's all just the audio of Zach and just the constant yelling through that, I thought was extremely funny. I don't know why that made me laugh so much. I really liked the joke of Mark doing the Italian like offensive stereotype and then calling his mom and that final bit with him being his mom.
It's so good.
The running jokes that I liked, Zach's character work one, where when the woman walks into their bar and they're like, Zach, that's like, was fantastic. And also the parking. Now, you know, they make that joke earlier about like whether things are relatable or not, which I thought was them trying to like go, you know, absurd, like, this is not what this is. Absurd humor is, you know, it's so easy to make relatable humor or whatever. And they went and did a joke about how hard it is to park sometimes. And I just loved all of that. I loved it also because it felt vaguely like they were referencing Queer Eye. Like, it was all about getting styled and fashioned up, and then they had the cameras set up the same way they do in the car, and just, like, devolving into, like, I wasn't yelling! All that sort of stuff.
We've been in that car trip, right? We've all been
in that car trip. That was relatable.
Yeah.
It was. I accept your apology. It's like, I wasn't fucking yelling. I wasn't fucking dying. Yeah, so good.
Karen, do you stand out for you?
Yeah. Man, because I actually, on my second type run through, I sort of started noting down a lot of the sketches.
Same.
And man, it's really hard to pick a favorite, but I still, the ones that sort of break me the most, I really like the song Morning Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That song is just on loop in my head daily now at this point. And yeah, obviously the Ellen sketch as well. But I don't know why. Maybe it's just the accents, but I loved the South Africans from the podcast.
Have you seen District 9, Mark? Was one of my favourite quotes.
Yes. Just his reaction where it's just like, oh, fuck.
I also really liked Blair Boyant.
Blair Boyant, yeah.
The clairvoyant. Like, that was just so stupid.
Oh, yeah.
And just, like, the cuts to the music.
I think
I
misread your email.
Yeah. Blair Boyant knows your fucking granddad. Like, it's just... that stuff was just broke me so many times on multiple watchings of that.
Another one that was just, again, it was just really stupid, and I liked that it was actually referenced, I think, in the episode before it, is... when the doors open and they say creak, it sounds like a man saying creak.
Yeah.
Just for like naming all of Christopher Nolan's films.
Yeah. And then he can't
has to
name
go twice for Dunkirk.
Yeah.
So yeah. Does anyone else have like a favorite song? I think Morning Brown's probably like the big hit, I think. But I mean, yeah.
It was Morning Brown, but like that's a relatable also. Yeah. Just when Zach's character comes in.
And also,
just wasn't ready for it.
Also, too, I mean, starting off with Everything's a Drum, if you're an Auntie Donna fan, yeah. That's like a classic from one of their live shows. And for them to kick off with it, it was like, here we go, we're setting the stage. So I really enjoyed that as well.
Again, speaking of things from a stage show, but again, it was just great to see in the TV show, is just Zach drawing the square. Like, why don't you stop being such a cunt? Just every time.
Yep. Yeah. And anytime Cowdoy showed up, I love Cowdoy. He's such a...
He does the dishes, man.
He does the dishes. and he's not a lippy fuck either.
Oh,
he's not a lippy fuck.
And I forgot the other reason why I liked that's so relatable song. It's just because what happens after that with the nets, which also brings me to another one of my favorite moments, is just anytime... the two times with Zach, and I think it's Broden as well, when they're playing a character on screen, but their Auntie Donna persona is there as well, it's just a mannequin.
Yeah, the
dressed like them. But just the way Zach's character leaves with a net after that sketch.
I'm sorry you've opened the floodgates now, Brod. Karen and I actually haven't had a chance to physically talk about this show together. We've just been messaging each other. So
this means I can just watch you guys do this. Why don't you? You can just do this. Fill up an hour and a half.
You're welcome
to
the content, by the way.
That's a podcast.
Where those annoying people at the party that are just like, oh, what about this part? Oh, it's so funny. I'm on this part here as well.
I mean, that's the part of the episode we're up to, isn't it?
The only other option we can go is, so now, why did you find that funny? And I don't think we're quite capable of having that discussion.
I was going to say, when you started the group chat, Brod, you were like, do you want to come on the show and discuss Auntie Donna's like Big Old House of Fun? For a brief second, I sat down and I'm like, how do I explain why I find this absurd crap funny? Because... It's madness.
Because I know there's people in my life that I would show this to and they would be stone-faced or, like, upset at me for showing them. Like, it's such a particular type of humor. You're either on board or you're not.
I watched the first two episodes with my wife and it's not like she hated it. She, like, giggled at a couple of things. But she, for the most part, I'm, like, in stitches. She's just sort of like...
So I do worry that we are evidence that this is made for straight, well, white men. We aren't all straight, actually, on this podcast, I think about it. But for white men in Australia. Like, we're just the target audience, and that if you're not that, you're not going to find it funny. I don't know.
Oh, well, you know, if there's anyone that doesn't fit in that demographic that's listening, like, make us
Let
feel
us
better.
Drop us a line. Tell us this wasn't a waste of time. speaking of stone face, though, that's how I would like to rewatch this show, stoned. Like, I think that's how I would like to do it a second time. That, I think I might get a bit more of a giggle out of it.
I was going to say, like, I feel like I want to watch, because I know, like, I'll watch Auntie Donna's stuff in general, just by myself, and I will laugh out loud once or twice, but say, if Kyron comes to visit, like, usually at one point of the night, we end up just going down the Auntie Donna rabbit hole, and I know we're just both killing ourselves laughing. So I think it's one of those shows, like, it amplifies it, or one of the, they're totally. One of those comedy groups that amplifies by the amount of people that you're watching it with.
Yeah, but that's why they're live performers, right? Like, you go to a comedy show and everyone's there to laugh, and therefore it just becomes like a thing that happens automatically. And so I wonder if I would have laughed harder if I did see this on stage or something like that, because I would have gone with the crowd. Like I said, I smiled most of the way through this. I was enjoying myself enough. I just didn't laugh out loud very often.
Yeah. They feed off the audience so well in the live show, like in their live shows. Like, it's, they will run with a joke for ages. Like in the Glendale Community College one that we, or a secondary college that we saw, which this sketch, it's the school teacher sketch where it's like, you know, it's your lunchtime, you know, I can wait here.
Iconic.
Yeah, basically keeping kids in at, like, you know, for not making sound and stuff, and sort of cutting into their lunchtime. And it's like one of those situations that, you know, going through high school, you've been through, you've sat there where it's like, someone's fucking it up for the rest of us. And going through all that sort of thing. That went on for so long in the live show. And to the point where it did that thing where it was like, it's funny. Then it's like, okay, it's just getting a bit long. And then it just hit another point of like, oh, it's funny again. So they build off that. So it is good to see that they can carry over that energy into, like, I mean, they've proven it with their YouTube stuff, but in a Netflix 25-minute comedy special episode or whatever.
Finally made the audience laugh at the very end, so, you know.
I love that. Yeah. The payoff on that was great.
It was great.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Does anyone have any side notes before we get to our least favourite and favourite episodes?
I have one just about the Alfred Hitchcock cameo, like Zachary says Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
He spent 4 hours in makeup. There's a video up on, I think, their Facebook group. On their Facebook page about that he spent like 2 or 3 hours in makeup getting fully made up for 5 second joke or whatever. And they actually show him like from side, like stage, essentially him filming that scene and then calling cut. And he walked over, he's like, cool, that was worth it. You're talking about commitment to jokes. Like they definitely are committed to jokes. And that is a testament to that.
Out of all the celebrity cameos, I really appreciated Kristen Skull. I always love hearing her voice in anything. Yes. I don't think there's anything she can't make better.
That was my only note, was that Kristen Schaal is only in good things. I'm trying to think of something bad. Like, I've seen Kristen Schaal in a lot of stuff now, and I can't think of a single thing I've seen her in that I didn't enjoy or at least think was okay. Like, she's always in good stuff. Kristen Schaal's in it. I'll give it a watch. It's probably good. She's great. Least favorite and favorite episodes. What was your least favorite episodes, Paul?
I loved all the episodes. I would have to say,
five
I was
stars,
thinking about
bloody well want to.
There was only one, probably the sketch that made me laugh the least, even though I liked it still, was the old timey like sports game one.
Sure.
That was
a straight up Monty Python bit. Like, yeah. I've seen that done by them before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was okay, but I think that was in episode 3, so maybe episode 3 just by default, but I wouldn't say there's a bad episode of this show.
Joel?
I would sort of echo that statement that I don't think there's a bad episode, to be fair. But the one I found sort of on the rewatch that I wasn't as excited about, apart from a couple of parts of that episode, was Nighttime, episode 5.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's too spooky for me.
It's too spooky for me.
That is actually very in line with Joel.
Well, yeah, it is, isn't it?
Exactly, see?
But no, I think it was... I did love the sun joke at the end, and because that's just so stupid, and the fact that it's...
What about the Sandman
paid
joke?
Actors. The Sandman was fine. It was just, for the most part, I think I laughed the least at that episode. I think the funniest part was Mark trying to put himself to sleep so he could wake up, pretend it was a dream. That is probably my favorite part of that whole thing.
I did really enjoy that bit, actually.
I didn't actually get a chance. That reminds me, but I do like just the bodies being thrown in the bin constantly.
Yeah, yeah.
The entire duration of the season.
Why'd you just walk off? You can't just walk off and go to sleep when we've murdered someone. It's a pretty great moment. Actually,
and then looking at the sleeping pills.
While we're just, because you've mentioned that one, actually, Weird Al obviously cameoed in that one. Do we have any particular favorite celebrity cameos? I think Mine was Paul F. Tompkins as Jukebox. Because it was a complete waste of Paul F. Tompkins in every sense of the word.
Absolutely.
I got to say, probably like Anthony Starr in Stray Man.
The Stray Man. Anthony Starr in Stray Man was pretty funny. I did enjoy that one. I also liked, Awesome Kong showing up in the Olympics episode. That was really good as well. Because I had to double take it. I'm like, Awesome Kong. I'm like, is that... And sure enough, it is. It's Welfare Queen from GLOW. So
yes,
I was like, that's really cool. And she's hilarious in it as well.
Karen, least favorite episode?
Again, as everyone else has said, I don't know if there's an episode that I didn't like. but again, on a second watch, I'm trying to think, man, did any of them not make me laugh? It would... Not because it's too spooky, but episode 5 might be the same for me as well.
Oh,
but again, wow. I laughed like most of the way through it.
Kyron's a scaredy cat. He's never actually played Amnesia.
I'm looking
at
these sketches and like, they're so good. I love all the episodes.
I personally think Olympics was my least favorite episode. I just didn't take any notes for it. Like nothing necessarily stood out to me as being particular. Like, but you're going to mention a skit that's in that to me right now and I'm going to go, oh yeah, that was fairly funny. But I don't know why.
The drug it
was
test. Just the one.
Anti-doping official.
That was great. The I drink the, piss.
He's got a bib on.
The question at the end of like, now did he join the anti-doping association because he could get access to piss, or is it more of a cultural thing he's just sort of fallen into over time? That was the funniest part of that one. Favorite episode. Reverse order. Kyron, what was your favorite episode?
Looking over all the sketches, I think it was episode 2. Just starting with Morning Brown, it also has the Ellen sketch for South Africans. I love the free time bit at the end when they just start throwing the ball around.
And the fact that it ends with like this is not canon. The events of this episode will have nothing, will never like appear again and further on.
The superimposed these are paid actors over the sun attack of episode 5 is pretty great to see. Joel, was your favorite episode?
I'm really struggling to pick one. I'm going to have to say, I think Olympics is probably my favorite. Olympics or dating? Actually, I will go dating. Just because, I love the parking sketch. Like, that made me laugh a lot. And then catching the notification in the nets. And just, it's Cowdoy catching it for him. So I think that's probably my favorite one.
Paul?
I'd say the pilot episode 1, Housemates, is just such a strong... introduction to them as comedians, and as you guys said before, like the first 3 sketches just like flow so well with each other. Like I knew I was hooked straight away. So
I actually agree. I think episode 1 is the strongest episode for me. I just came getting to the end of it and realizing that I was like, I'm actually going to enjoy this, and it did just seem to flow better than any episode besides that. And that when you talk about Nighttime being a least favorite episodes, the fact that it's just so disjointed, and I know they're making fun of that with like the anthology type thing with Weird Al and stuff, is fine. But I know the first one just really, really just... That was a great introduction. 100% agree, Paul. It's a very, very good episode. Does anyone have any predictions, hopes, or concerns for future Auntie Donna, Big Ol' House of Fun? Anyone willing to make a prediction on where this show is going? I dare you.
I feel that with COVID-19, it might have to be shot in Australia next season.
Oh, yeah. They could totally do that, though. Like, why not?
That would be great if they could. Mm.
Considering how many celebrities I think are living in Australia at the moment, I'm pretty sure Matt Damon's been hanging out.
Zac Efron is...
Zac Efron.
He's trapped in Adelaide.
Natalie Portman has been seen at Woolies recently. Yeah. Why not? There's plenty of people here they could use. Get Tom Hanks back over here. You know, we know he's immune now. All I would say is I think that they're going to get a second season. I think
so.
The trending in Australia is not too surprising. Trending in the UK, though, is pretty significant. And I think there's a good chance that they will find... And I've seen some pieces written up from some fairly prominent critics in the US as well. I think it might be a bit of a slower burn over there. Maybe now's not the funniest time of the year.
Right.
Funniest time in US history either right now. But yeah. I do feel like that they're going to get that season 2. I can't imagine it's that expensive to make. Like, the return on investment, I think, must be pretty high for a show like this.
In my mind, I think they'll get a second season for sure. But I just... I want to put them out there as the Bluey of Australian sketch comedy. So that's when I mentioned Bluey once.
Bluey of Australian sketch comedy. Bluey's
taken the world by storm. It's loved by everyone. And, you know, I hope one day Auntie Donna is in that same echelon for sketch comedy of Australia.
One day we'll get you on and some other dads to talk about Bluey and how great it is.
I'm waiting for the call, dude. Honestly. All right, Paul. That last episode that came out, tears.
Did it make you chuffed?
It did make me chuffed. It did. Yes.
Ah,
absolutely.
Beautiful. What an ending. Well done. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, a.k.a. at Shawnee Boy Draws. And our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Hart of Birthday Loyalty Club. A Birthday Loyalty Club also, just a really good, nowhere near as frequent, as prolific as Auntie Donna. Check out Birthday Loyalty Club on YouTube. Yes. They've got some amazing stuff.
Yes.
Just some brilliant, absurd comedy. Check out their web series, which I also assistant directed, Try My Best. I think if you like Auntie Donna, there's a good chance you'll like that too, actually. Give that a try. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordes, on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S. Damask wasn't on this episode, but you can find her at maskymoo, M-A-S-K-Y-M-O-O. Paul, tell everybody what you do and where they can find you.
So again, I host the Swapcast podcast with my friends Brendan and Lucy, and every episode we watch a body swapping film and review it. Our next episode coming up is a film called Tammy and the T-Rex, which from 1994, and it's about Paul Walker, who gets attacked by a lion, and then his brain is surgically removed and put into the body of a giant animatronic T-Rex, and he goes on a killing spree. It also stars Denise Richards as well. So,
oh my god!
Oh wow! You know it's gonna be quality.
and it was originally made as a horror comedy, and then they edited it down to a family film, and now it's just been rediscovered in its full glory, gory details. So they've remastered it and released it as Tammy and the T-Rex gore cut.
Wow, so, okay.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's
so neat. I recommend seeking out that film, but also listening to our episode on it, because we had a lot of fun reviewing that one. So the Swapcast podcast, you can find us on all the socials, Acast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere. So,
what did you do for your last episode, Paul?
Oh, the last episode we actually had Broder Damask on, and we talked about TV.
That was really subtle.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we reviewed four iconic TV body swaps. So we did an episode of Community, Futurama, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and most importantly, Lizzie McGuire. So we had a lot of fun.
It was super fun. It was so good. I've listened back to the episode now, and I've really, really enjoyed it. So hopefully, yeah, listeners of Hunting Seasons, go check that out. Definitely worth your time. Are you guys going to make a beeline for Freaky when it's available?
Yeah, so because Lucy, my co-host, is actually just had a baby, so she couldn't go to the movies to watch that. But it is coming out streaming, I think, mid-December. So,
sweet.
So when it does, we'll review it then.
Brilliant. Excellent. Joel and Kyron, where can people find you guys?
You can find us at Dialogue Options. I'm just doing our end spiel now. It's like,
go for it.
Which I'm not very good at anyway. Every time I have to do the end spiel, if you want to hear me embarrass myself more so than I have probably on this episode, you go listen to us there. But no, we are a video games podcast. We just talk about video games because we really like them. And we talk about video games that we like most of the time because we have to buy them. So
exactly.
We don't really want to waste money on games that we're not going to enjoy, even if it is for content.
Virgil, we do it. We have some bets. We've got a stake to come up with for the Game Awards soon. So I'm going to have to pick a bad game for you to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've lost the last 2 years.
I have lost the last 2 years. The last game I had to play for losing the Game Awards last year was Jump Force. That was not a fun time. It's a bad anime game. But yeah, we talk about video games. Our last episode we put up, I think, was the Ghost of Tsushima cast.
Yes.
We talked about the Ghost of Tsushima from Sucker Punch Studios, which I think we all very much enjoyed. since then, we've had a go at the raid, and it was an interesting time, to say the least.
I was quite frustrated. I apologize, Joel.
Yep, nope, that's all right. We all had our moments, but we'll, yeah, you can hear us probably talk about that the next time we get together to record. But if you want to find me individually, I'm at Jolly Mac on Twitter. That's pretty much all I use is Twitter. So, yeah.
Guys, sorry, I was going to say.
No, you go.
If you need a guest for your podcast, there's one video game that I'm an expert in, and that's Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, all right. I have
I'm not
spent...
sure if that's on brand or off brand. I'm not really sure.
Look, it's not creepy if a gay guy is playing the game where that's obsessed with like anime boobs, okay?
What's that segment you have on your podcast every week where you objectify
hot or
people?
Not.
Hot or not, that's right. Yeah.
I've spent hours grinding on that game, getting all the bikinis.
Have you?
Yes.
You've grinded on
literal,
that game,
literal grinding and metaphorical grinding. So if you're going to do a special Dead or Alive Extreme Volleyball 3 episode, apparently all the PS4 games are backwards compatible on PS5. So there might even be like a HD upgrade when we get PS5. So,
Yeah, the boob physics chip they've added to the PS5 really improves that experience, I'm sure.
The boobs jiggle
so realistic.
Imagine
the boob physics with a smooth frame rate.
Exactly.
Oh, true.
Oh my God.
120 frames per second. 4K. Boob jiggle, 4K. That's what we're all waiting for.
HDR.
Oh, God.
Who makes Dead or Alive games? Because they are onto that right now. They're already playing it. Don't worry. Other host. We didn't hear where people can find you.
Sorry to interrupt. Yeah.
No, that was worth it, honestly. And now I'm going to keep an eye out for Dead or Alive Extreme Volleyball.
Yeah, for sure.
You can find me on Twitter where I am just at LemonManX. And yeah, obviously, I'm also wherever the dialogue options socials are.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, guys, for coming on doing this last minute. You did me a huge favor and the listeners a huge favor. Thank you, listeners, for indulging our madness. Next episode, we really, really hope we'll be back to discuss Lovecraft Country Season 1. I'll tell you what, if it's not that, just to give you a heads up, it'll probably be The Queen's Gambit Season 1 with another special guest. But hopefully it'll be Lovecraft Country. We'll see. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Good night, everybody.
And so, completely.
The only really... Oh, yes, please.
No, there you go.
The only... Wow.
Yeah.
Oh.
Awkward.
We all host podcasts. That's just where we're at.